I was a soldier, then a veteran, a husband, and a father. And with my VA home loan, I'm a homeowner. No down payment required and no PMI. Build your future with the VA home loan. Get what you earned. Visit choose.va.gov.
Not all veterans are eligible for the type or amount of benefits mentioned here.
Belcha, welcome to the Village Oak Tree. I'm your host, Terrence O'Donnell. Thank you for joining me once again. I didn't bring a lot of news stories with me this week as there's just too much chaos going on around the world. I did bring a lot, but, you know, nowhere near what everybody else is talking about. There are plenty of more accomplished journalists who are taking care of that for us already. You can go anywhere and get everybody's viewpoint. What I did find are a few articles about climate change, which the current U.S. administration has ordered the removal of this terminology from its public vocabulary, along with the acronym DEI. I also have some news stories about the current European crisis regarding the U.S. pullback from keeping Europe secure and the imminent demise of NATO with the U.S., without the U.S. I do have a couple of other stories to talk about as well that are not part of the mainstream you should know about, such as the real possibility of the U.S. committing piracy on the high seas, or so it seems anyway. I'll let you be the judge. I'm also going to talk about just how bad the infrastructure is in the United States in bits and pieces over the next couple of weeks. This week, I start with cybersecurity, or lack thereof. Once I've finished talking about the stories I found this week, I would ask everyone to stick around through my commercial break because I have a treat for any listeners today. One of my favorite storytellers has written a second installment to a short story I read to people last November in my old podcast, Crown of Biha, Stories and Poetry. It's a dystopian future story about climate change, or what it will look like maybe in about 75 to 100 years. I will be adding in some sound effects as well. And man, that took me all day yesterday to get that done. I did this with the first installment, so it wouldn't feel right if I didn't do the same with this one. So come sit you down somewhere in a patch of warm spring sunshine or a warm, cozy spot if you live in the northern climes and it's still cold out. And let me regale you with what news from the outside that I have from the outside world and a story to make you think. So I'm going to lead off with Trump's latest crazy edict to remove from all federal public mention and records the words climate change and DEI. As we all know by now, or most of us anyway, he has decreed that DEI has to be done away with and all mention removed from all government records and institutions. This applies to all federal offices and any schools across the nation that receive federal money in any way, and so on. So from pre-K to grade 12, all colleges and universities, the three-letter acronym DEI is to be erased from all mention by anyone. For everything up to grade 12, and it's up to the states to enforce, as he will remove the state's federal school funding if they don't comply. In line with that, he's also decreed that the two words climate change must also be removed from federal records. So let me bring up this news article here for you. This is what I'm talking about. U.S. Coast Guard Academy censors climate change from its curriculum. So this article talks about how the U.S. Coast Guard Officer Academy has been told they're not to mention or teach anything about climate change in their curriculum anymore. It's to be scrubbed from all instructor syllabuses. So as the journalist writes, how are these young officers in training supposed to learn about the actual climate change that anyone with any half a brain knows is going on? What if these officers graduate and end up working climate change weather disasters, which we know they will, and know little to nothing about the science behind the extreme weather event they're rescuing people from? If they're not allowed to mention those two words in fear of losing their commissions, how's that going to affect morale? How are they going to explain to someone they're rescuing why their house or boat just got destroyed by extreme weather? Apparently, now that King Donald has outlawed the terminology, they can't. or they have to get creative with their language. I'm sorry, but that's too much of a burden to put on some young officer who's already under a lot of stress to try and take care of people. I have another article about environment and speech. And so let me pull that one up. Industry-backed legislation would bar the use of signs behind hundreds of environmental protections. Industrialists, who are trying very hard to get everything deregulated, want all scientific references to the environment protections erased. You take out the science of why something is contaminating the environment, then there's no need for environmental protections. Real simple, right? Except for the people living around these industrialized areas who are getting sick with cancers and other things and dying. But the CEOs and investors don't care about those poor sods. They're spendable as long as they keep showing up for work or replaced when they can't work anymore. Oh, and let's not forget that there's no more Medicaid, so no more health care either. You have to know that Obamacare is also on a chopping block, just waiting for the right moment to cut that out too. Universities are all under assault once again as of the last couple of weeks. Now it's from Homeland Security. Trump and his minions, which let me pull this down here. Trump and his minions have given the green light for the immigration police to enter college university campuses nationwide without warrants to round up any students or faculty who may have publicly supported the Palestinians or condemned genocide. If those they arrest are in the U.S. under student visa, it's being revoked. If they're in the U.S. with a valid green card, it's being revoked. If they're naturalized citizens, that's being stripped away. If anyone says anything in the media in support of the Palestinians, condemns Israel, or the genocide, and is attending any college or university right now, they're a target. ICE will be coming for them to deport those they can and try to jail those they can't deport. To give everyone an example, the infamous, and I say infamous only because of the campus protest last year, Columbia University just lost $400 million in federal subsidies because Trump needed to make an example out of them to bring all the higher learning campuses across the country under heel. Even though they went out of their way to comply with his demands about shutting down the right to peaceful protest and freedom of speech. You can bet that every higher learning campus in the country took notice. And the not so higher learning institutions as well, such as vocational schools and others. Americans are losing more and more of their basic civil rights every week. You're getting to be at the point where they're almost all gone now. I have another article from my friend Mitch about education. He writes that public schools, and let me pull this up here. We're watching the corporate takeover of education in real time, he writes. And he says that their curriculum is so restricted now that they're a little more than propaganda outlets to teach the very basics in order to prepare students for the corporate workforce. I remember rhetoric like that back when I went to school decades ago. Get good grades so you can be ready to go out and get a better job. I didn't get good grades in public school because I had other things going on to distract me, but the propaganda was there all the same and still is. Mitch tells us that kids are still pushed into getting the best grades in STEM courses to prepare for the workforce, get the best grades in order to get into the best college, universities, in order to achieve the best salaries in the workforce after graduating. We've all heard that adage that if you don't go to college, you'll only be able to get a job as a janitor or a hotel maid or a restaurant waiter and so forth. I, for one, never graduated from any formal college. I've been to a couple of vocational schools and graduated from both with honors, thanks to my military education. I used those schools to get into lucrative, hardworking trades careers in appliance repair, commercial HVAC and refrigeration, and then later in life, a career in IT. Which brings me to something I want to talk about that affects us all in one way or another. Most of us without even thinking about it. Cybersecurity. The reason I chose to talk about this week is because I watched a limited Netflix series last week called Zero Day with Robert De Niro. We all know who he is, or most of us do anyway. He's been in the movies and such for many years. he produced and starred in this series about cyber hacking. Without giving it all away, the series is about what would happen if some people were able to use a computer virus to take down the power grids across the country. Obviously, chaos ensued when airplanes, trains, and cars lost all their traffic control and other bad things that could happen with just a 1 minute complete electrical outage across the country. In this series, lots of people died or were seriously hurt. In the real world, we had cyber hackers working to take down systems all the time. Everything from state-sponsored actors like China.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Russia, North Korea, Iran, Israel, and many others who are actively trying to get into computer networks every day, all to try and steal information, ransom institutions, ransomware, and everyday hackers, such as kids, try to see if they can hack into something just for the thrill and get some street cred. Very few succeed, only because so many have succeeded in the past, and robust deterrents were invented and deployed after the fact to prevent it from happening again. How many news stories have we heard over the last few years about ransomware infecting hospitals and locking up networks until the administrators paid the ransom? You have to know, cyber hacking's been going on for decades. When Microsoft first put out their very first operating systems, they were wide open and everybody and their brother was getting into them. And of course, through the years, they've tightened them up, so on and so forth. There have been lots of stories through the years about state-sponsored hackers stealing technical information from government servers and military industrial corporations. North Korea is famous for this. Plus, they use viruses and scams to steal a lot of money for their government. China has stolen a lot of classified technical information through the years. Russia is famous for setting up all the cyber farms to try and subvert American elections, especially back in 2015 and 2016. Iran was just accused of trying to hack into political systems computers recently. I could go on, but you get the idea. So let me tell you a little bit about my IT background. As I mentioned, I'm a graduate. I graduated at the top of my IT class, several years ago. And it was an IT vocational school. In order to graduate, I had to study all the basics of the IT world, one of which was cybersecurity. This is one of my industrial standard IT certifications after I graduated. So I feel like I'm somewhat qualified to talk about the lack of IT security rampant across the private sector in the United States and the world, actually. But I want to focus on the U.S. right now. In the United States, most, if not all, electrical grids are privatized. And that makes them more vulnerable to hackers than government systems as a rule. Cybersecurity can be expensive to set up and maintain. Don't get me wrong, the government has laid down some regulations regarding minimal security that these infrastructure corporations must have in place to prevent hackers, but it's up to the company to decide just how much they want to deploy in order to maintain services. And if Trump rolls back regulations like he wants to do, well, you know what? They may become even more vulnerable in the future. If the company operates in a low revenue state, they may not deploy the real robust security out of cost concerns. If the company makes a lot of profit from its subscribers in an area or a state, they may spend a little more to keep their reputation intact. If the company operates at a near monopoly in a low population area, they may not spend a lot of money on upgrades to their systems, since they want to keep the profit margins as high as they can. What this means for the customers, besides high prices, is that a lot of these companies are using out-of-date software that doesn't meet current security standards, out-of-date servers and computer hardware and so on. I know this because I used to work for a state agency when I was still a 40-hour-a-week commuter. They were constantly fighting to keep IT systems compliant with new security requirements and always behind schedule. They probably still are. These are the people who provide you with all the state services that most people take for granted, like DMV, agriculture inspectors, state police, state DOT, so many other services that most people don't think about until they need something. I live in what I would call a moderate state when it comes to state services. They don't have a lot of money, but they aren't poor either. The state is one of those that has a good mix of urban and rural areas, and depending on where you live, you get a level of services based on the average income base for that area. Most states are like that when it comes to IT services. In the urban, affluent suburban areas, IT infrastructure is usually kept up better than in rural areas. In my state, we still had government facilities in the poor rural areas operating with old DSL networks provided by the local internet providers. That internet technology went out of date a couple of decades ago. But we have state offices still working with old baud modems with the screechy, scratchy noisemakers of old. They were trying to upgrade as they could while I was still working there, but due to state budgets, it's going to be a slow process. Remember what I said. I live in what I would call a moderate operating budget state. Imagine what the computer and network infrastructure systems look like in one of the poorer states, say Idaho, Maine, Iowa, West Virginia, Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, and so many others. I know that when I ran my own repair business up in very rural northern Maine, the best internet I could buy for my company was the outdated broadband cable system, which they still run up there today. Some poor rural communities around the country don't even have that yet. They're still using the vastly unsecured DSL phone line system still. It's rare, but it's still a thing for some of the rural farm communities across the country and remote cattle ranches out west. You know, the poor ones. What you will see is these poor state agencies and public schools still using unsecure internet systems because they can't afford to upgrade. This is only going to get worse as the country's infrastructure continues to decline. This is how the hackers get access to money and technical secrets, by beginning into non-secure systems or tricking untrained personnel. I remember a story dating back a few years ago about how a rural school secretary where I used to live lost thousands of dollars in the school district's money because she hadn't been trained about identifying fake emails. This happens all the time because these rural school systems don't have enough money to pay for the cyber training for their employees. We all know that the state public school systems don't normally have anything worth stealing other than some public funds, but electrical grids, sewage waste treatment plants, clean water pumping stations, and other essential infrastructure systems that any country needs to be able to operate safely and provide stable services to its customers, we all agree, need to be kept secure from hackers. Unfortunately, in the United States, these systems are not integrated very well. So what works in one district doesn't always talk nice to other districts' networks due to antiquated systems and out-of-date security protocols. A wealthy urban or suburban area of the country will usually be using the latest security protocols, but a poor rural area, they'll be using what they can afford, which doesn't communicate so well with the newer security protocols. What if the Chinese were to get mad enough to create a computer virus and deploy it around the country, essentially knocking these antiquated computer systems offline, even for just a few minutes? Imagine streetlights going off during the work commute. Imagine the electricity going out to water pumping stations and sewage treatment plants. What about police and fire dispatch communications? This would cause a minor hiccup for a small rural town, but for a mid-sized town or city, or worse, a large city like Chicago or Los Angeles, it'd be catastrophic. There'd be lots of dead people. This is the condition of the U.S. IT network infrastructure outside of most federal institutions. Even some lesser federal institutions are vulnerable still. A few years ago, the IRS, the U.S. Tax Department, had a big problem with tax form backups due to out-of-date computer systems, and they were promised new upgraded systems in order to handle all the backlog tax forms. It took them a long time to upgrade things, and in some states, they still haven't been sorted out. And we're talking like we're using Windows 7. Well, I don't know. Some places may be still using Windows 7 machines and server systems that are way out of date. The U.S. Veterans Department suffered with the same thing and still does in some of the poorer states and regions. Access to health records of veterans on these ancient computer systems was a nightmare. I was still receiving CD discs with my health records on them not even a couple years ago. I guess the VA considers Postal Service a secure delivery system versus secure servers. I suppose that's one way to implement an air gap security system for health records, unless the post office loses it or someone steals the disc in transit. This just goes to show how everyone that the United States is extremely vulnerable to hackers in nearly every aspect, except the Department of Defense, the White House, Congress, and senatorial office in Washington, D.C. For politicians with state offices, maybe not quite so much. Meanwhile, the rest of the developed world is mostly surpassing the United States in protecting their computer networks from bad actors. The U.S. passing newer and more stringent regulations constantly. East Asia has been way ahead of U.S. for a long time. China's so far above the U.S., there's no way the U.S. can get an equal footing anymore. And yet, the U.S. is supposed to be the wealthiest country on the planet. We all know where all that money's gone, and it sure isn't into the infrastructure of the country. In overseas news, Europe wants to go all in on defense spending now since Trump has decided to stop supporting them. I wonder where they're going to find the money. They don't have the robust economies anymore to devote 5% of their GDP to defense. Common sense tells us that the PNs in the EU Council will strip out social services and borrow the money they likely can't pay back. And they wonder why the extreme political conservative parties are getting such a large foothold in their parliaments these days. Poland's PM is so scared of the Russians.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
He's making it mandatory that all young Polish men and some women go to military training. And I've actually got a story for that. And what I... Let me switch gears here. Let me show you this one. Well, all right. Never mind. Let me pull my... That's better. Well, why are we not? There we go. Yeah, there we go. Well, no. As I was saying before I got glitched here, he's making it mandatory for Polish young women, men and some women to go get military training. A lot of them will become reservists, but still, that'll make him real popular with the younger voters. Meanwhile, Russia's laughing at him. All right. So meanwhile, England and France are becoming very buddy-buddy over their fears of the Russians. France is thinking about how to extend their nuclear warheads to cover all of Western Europe. Maybe Britain can help with that, despite being pariahs in the EU. Things in Europe are becoming very interested as these Russophobes go crazy with the fear of an invading Russian army. It looks like it will be up to the voters to corral these idiots before someone lights a fuse to a nuclear warhead. In the Middle East, I found an article about how the U.S. now is thinking about arbitrarily boarding marine vessels they suspect of carrying Iranian oil to other countries. Let me pull that one up. They call this enforcing sanctions. I call it what it is, high seas piracy using U.S. Navy assets. What if the Iranians decide to protect their ships? Any sensible sovereign nation has a right to defend its people from threats like pirates within their territorial waters. For their ships outside of the territorial domain, after the first couple of boardings and ships being detained for carrying so-called sanctioned cargoes, I bet they might set up naval escorts to prevent that from happening again. I know I would if I were someone like Iran. The question is, can they protect their ships? Would other countries help? Iran has a security agreement with Russia and China and China has said that they would do what was necessary to secure oil deliveries to China from the Gulf states. Could King Donald start a naval war with Iran, Russia, maybe China, who has the largest navy in the world? The U.S. doesn't have many allies anymore. I don't see the Canadians stepping in to help. The Brits don't have much of a navy anymore, so France? Given what Trump just did to Europe, probably not. So goes the biggest players in the U.S., so go the rest. Australia might help, as they are all about helping so long as the submarine deal with the AUKUS treaty remains intact. If that deal goes south, as certain U.S. defense people are intimating about, the Aussies may also abandon their American cousins. That leaves the mighty U.S. Navy to handle things on their own. How long would that last after a couple of American ships get seriously damaged or even sunk in the Persian Gulf or off the Straits of Oman? If King Donald's worried about his favorable poll ratings, wait until a bunch of sailors and Marines die in the seas off the Gulf states while attempting to board vessels that they were told to hijack. We didn't have enough stuff to worry about, enough stuff to keep us up at night. The U.S. immigration police are starting to arrest pro-Palestinian protesters who made it into the news feeds or have arrest records from campus protests last year. I'm sure we've all heard of Mahmoud Khalil now, a Palestinian student, now graduated, married to an American woman who was 8 months pregnant with their first child, and had a valid green card up until they arrested him last weekend. He's now sitting in an ICE detention center somewhere in Louisiana, waiting for deportation without his wife and unborn child. My understanding is that an immigration judge has put a pause on that while they review his case. He will likely never see his Columbia University diploma, as Columbia will probably erase all of his records as if he never attended. There is a German woman, and I've got another article here. Let me pull this one up. There's a German woman who was in ICE custody in San Diego for weeks, who made the mistake of trying to cross the southern border from Tijuana with her American girlfriend a couple of weeks ago, or more like about almost a month ago. ICE has been holding her, accusing her of trying to work in the U.S. because herself and her American girlfriend had tattoo equipment with them when they tried to cross. Another German tourist was detained for a couple of weeks, and he had a tourist visa. And a British girl was arrested and detained in Washington State for the same thing, accused of attempting to work in the U.S. on a tourist visa. There's only one way to look at this now. If you're here in the U.S. under a student visa, or from the Middle East, or anywhere else for that matter, your profile picture is on some social media app showing that you were at one of the campus protests somewhere on a campus in the U.S. last year, ICE is coming for you. They are supposedly using AI to search through millions of social media feeds to find anyone who attended a protest in order to ascertain their immigration status. If they find you, they will revoke your visa, green card, or your naturalized citizenship and deport you. This is coming all the way from Marco Rubio, the new Secretary of State. If you're a foreign tourist attempting to enter the U.S. from Mexico or Canada, no matter what your intent or where you're from, whether you have a passport or a return plane ticket to your country of origin or what used to be any other legal means of setting foot on U.S. soil, those days are gone. If you land in a U.S. airport and a stopover to another country, you could be detained at the whim of the immigration SS troopers at Customs and held on bogus charges indefinitely now. You wouldn't be surprised that this may apply to Canadians very soon with the trade wars escalating. The U.S. is already forcing them to be fingerprinted if they want to win her over in the U.S. The new liberal Canadian PM says he will stand up to Trump's government over the tariffs. Canadians were already boycotting American imports across the country. A couple of provinces that are selling electricity to a handful of U.S. states are planning on raising the prices soon. The Canadians are pretty mad right now, and that's not something the Yanks want to have. It's going to hurt a lot of U.S. wallets. Tourism is way down. It's not even summer yet. In other news, the protests are starting to get louder. Tesla dealers across the U.S. and Europe are seeing a lot of protesters disrupting business everywhere. Sales are way down. I have to wonder what the boy wonder is going to do about that. Is this the start of something bigger? a lot of experts are protesting this, and I'm going to bring up this other article here. And this one's from The Guardian. And I found this one, and this is about what I was just talking about, boycotting. You know, it's only, you know, a lot of experts are saying this sort of thing, grassroots protesting, and they've been saying it only take one spark to set off nationwide protests, such as the U.S., such U.S. hasn't seen since the late 1960s and early 1970s. Are we starting to see something like that take off here? I also have to wonder about Western Europe once people start protesting all these social service cuts in order to pay for the extra defense spending their leaders are pushing for. It's coming. Just wait for a bit. Civil unrest is breaking out in little spurts here and there right now. But if the leaders of these countries keep going the way they are, there could be a there could be nationwide strikes and boycotts galore in countries like Germany, France, and Poland, and many others. It may spread across Europe as well. England may catch the fever and start striking and protesting against Starmer's government. Romania is having protests over their barring of Georgescu from running for office again, all because he ran on a platform that was Russian-friendly and no NATO. There are rumors that the EU Council told the Romanian election officials and judges that they had to get rid of him and vote in an EU-favorable candidate. Well, looks like that happened. Whatever happened to EU democracy? Apparently, the Russophobia scared the EU Council members so badly, they're acting against their voters' wishes. I expect to see more protests soon. The U.S. and Europe are starting to become very scary places to live in, or even just step foot in for any reason. You can bet that tourists will be looking for more peaceful and safer places to go on vacations from now on. Noted economists are starting to predict a global recession by the end of 2025. It may be sooner in the EU. Trump's isolationism is going to bring on a lot of financial pain domestically. Countries are already starting to cancel American private contracts and import orders. The U.S. stock market is...
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
Tanking. And I actually have something here for that. I got this out of Al Jazeera. And the big thing is, Trump and his cabinet are either in denial or shrugging their shoulders, telling Americans it will probably hurt a little before things straighten out. I'm sorry, but once the damage to the economy is done, there will be no coming back to the way things were. Maybe that's the point. There are other op-eds being written to say that this is what the oligarchs want, to crash the American economy so bad that the prices of everything except food and housing, and maybe even food and housing, will crash so badly they can buy things like small companies and real estate real cheap and resell it later at a higher price, like they did in the 1930s. Trouble is, the U.S. doesn't have another FDR to come riding out of the sun to save the day. If there's another major depression, it'll be for good. There'll be no do-overs. Democracy will probably say bye-bye in the United States and Europe. I've been saying since I got back from my last tour of duty in the Middle East that Americans and Western Europeans are so spoiled. Europeans have forgotten what Europe was like at the end of the World War II. The U.S. never had to experience any of that. And that's why they behave the way they do. We'll soon see how all this turns out as more and more people start protesting all this anarchy created by the governments and warmongering over nothing. Once the cost of living and the loss of social services reaches a level of unsustainability, things will get ugly. I don't imagine Europeans will stand by too long once the EU Council starts stripping away their healthcare and senior pensions, among other social services, to pay for an EU defense force to defend against an imaginary enemy. In the U.S., once more and more green card holders and citizens start being rounded up for deportation in the name of national security, the prices of everyday item like food, clothing, and household necessities will go up beyond the reach of most households, and civil unrest will crank up in earnest. Are people in the immigration stormtroopers going to declare an insurrection and call out the soldiers to quell the rioters? Will the soldiers actually shoot unarmed protesters if called upon to do so? Some will, without a doubt. But with all the civilian gun owners in the U.S. right now, that would be an open invitation for a violent civil war. How many National Guardsmen will disobey orders and refuse to shoot their neighbors? There will be a lot more unrest and protests before things get that far. But there's already a lot of chatter on social media and chat boards talking about these things. Expect things to get worse as the economy keeps nosediving into the basements in the next few months. Just this week, the U.S. stock market lost $1.7 trillion, spelled with a T, dollars because of tariffs. Canadian provinces threatened to raise tariffs on their electricity sold to Minnesota. So I have this here. Let me go. We'll start with these. Trump threatened to raise tariffs on steel and aluminum to 50% in retaliation. Now, once again, he's backed off to 25%. Canada backed off with their threats of tariffing the electricity. Canada is getting ready to turn away all American imports as soon as they can once this new Prime Minister Carney takes over in a few days. There is a serious boycott of American goods taking place across Canada and Europe right now, and it promises to get worse. And this is not being done by the governments. This is being done by the everyday people. All this instability by Trump is creating havoc in the stock markets and with the used-to-be allies of the U.S. Trump is even going after the Veterans Administration. So for all of you American veterans out there who receive health care from your local VA hospital, stand by. Services may be getting cut short very quickly, along with the other benefits that previous presidents promised us. Remember, Trump considers disabled veterans losers, so he has no sympathy for any of us. You want to know when it's time to stock up on essentials. Watch the morbidly wealthy. When they start selling off a lot of stock investments for cash, you know something's coming. They have ways of finding things out ahead of time that only their money can buy. Musk has lost billions in Tesla stock all over the world lately. You know, in the last few days, especially. That should tell you something. You want to know what's going on? Watch Warren Buffett. For the rest of us, all we can do is protect ourselves as best we can and try to survive what's coming. There's got to be a whole lot of angry, hungry people in the U.S. and Europe by this time next year. What do you think King Donald is going to do about that? To quote a famous French queen, let them eat cake. If you know who I'm talking about, you know what happened to her. So that's what I've got for you here this week. I appreciate you tuning in. Now, here's what I'm going to do. I've got a commercial break that I'm going to bring up here in a minute. And after the break, I got a couple of the stories I told you about. They're a bit lengthy, but if you like audiobook kind of stories, tune in and then listen to them when we go. So here we go. I want to take this minute to explain how you can support this podcast and to advertise my book. The podcast is free and can be found on these major mobile podcast apps, on my YouTube channel, and my Substack page at Crown and Beehive, the Tree of Life at Substack.com. To help defray my cost, I'm asking for donations of any amount so everyone has an opportunity to watch or listen to this podcast anywhere in the world. I set up a donations tab at RSS.com on the Village Oak Tree and on my website at www.crownandbeehive.com. And I'll link to PayPal for your security. This way you can use any currency you wish from around the world, providing PayPal is available to you in your country. So now let me tell you about my book. Fugitives in the New United States, which can be found on all major online book retailers around the world, comes in hardcover, paperback, and ebook version. You don't want to wait for them to print you one. You can also buy a hardcover or paperback edition from me directly through the bookstore page of my website, and I'll ship it right out to you. This is a dystopian fiction about what the United States might look like by 2031 under a Christian theocracy. It's full of drama, action, and romance, set against a backdrop of U.S. societal collapse. The story follows a trio of resistance fighters as they navigate across Upper New England in their quest to escape from the authoritarian regime. So that's all I have here, and I appreciate any effort you can to support this endeavor that I'm doing, no matter how small it may be. Thank you very much. All right, welcome back. So I'm going to let you listen to these stories. I say listen to because, I mean, even though I spliced in some background video stuff here, it was originally, and even the second chapter that I bring you, they were originally audio stories, like audiobooks. So I tried to give you a little bit of video enhancement, if you will. Go ahead. I'm going to play these for you. And let me know what you think. The stories are from Ken W. On his Vindicator Substack page. I woke up alone on the beach, masked in clouds of spray. When I sat up, the rising tide hit me in the face like a frozen sheet. I snatched my leather back off the sand where I'd been using it as a pillow and ran up the beach into the dunes. In the darkness, I tripped on driftwood and strands of plastic. I found her at the top of a dune with a little driftwood fire sputtering and her pale skin aglow in its weak light. A blanket was around her bare shoulders and her bushy hair fluttered in the breeze. When she saw me, she threw it sideways into the sand and scooted over. "You should have woken me before heading for high ground," I said, and sat beside her. She shrugged. "You don't sleep much, and I wanted to leave you." That part was true. I didn't like closing my eyes, because that brought back memories from better times. I crossed my legs and leaned down her shoulder. "So..." "Yes," she said, and raised a dark, thin eyebrow. "Think we'll see turtles this year?" I twisted to look up in the sky. The glitter band still shined. I remember hearing from someone that it would be a few years until most of the satellites started running out of power. "We saw them last year, I know, but we hadn't seen them the year before that," I said. "You worry too much," she said. She jabbed a thumb into her chest. "I think they'll be there. I think we've finally gotten past the worst years." I didn't share her optimism. Maybell had grown up in what we used to call a driftwater community. She was used to living the way our ancestors a millennia ago did, worrying one season ahead.
Planet Fitness has everything you need to start strong, so you can give everything you've got. From plate-loaded strength equipment and functional training areas to treadmills, stair climbers, and free weights. Our equipment is best in class, and our clubs are right around the corner, so you can make this your strongest year yet. Join the club today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends Friday, January 9th. Are you coming? Planet Fitness. We're all strong on this planet. See club for details.
From a skyscraper somewhere that no longer existed, I'd seen humanity lose everything. "Want to try sleeping more while the fire's still going?" she said with pride at her flickering blaze of damp twigs. "Of course. Thank you for the fire. It's lovely," I said. We lay back and fell asleep with the sand warming our backs and our bare bodies pressed together, arms entwined to warm our fronts. The next morning, the ruined Dallas skyline poked from the mist. I paused from packing up camp, counted the great car colleges. 7. Missing one, I counted again. "One of the big towers must have fallen over last night," I said and pointed. She counted 2. "We didn't hear it." "I always miss the steel people buildings falling over. I wanted to watch one go." She kicked sand in frustration, and the wind blew it back on us. I smirked at her, for I'd seen many buildings collapse, and she'd always missed the great ancient towers toppling, shedding debris as they went for one reason or another. She aimed her next sand kick at me. We ate our last bits of hog jerky for breakfast. Then we headed off up the Caribbean coast. We wore our belongings around our waist and belts and over our shoulders in a poncho and leather backpack. Humidity was seething, The perspiration had condensed our bodies in seconds. We each carried a spear in one hand and held each other with the other, our fingers intertwined, rubbing salt into each other. The Dallas Metro coast unfolded before us. Empty shells of houses sank into the newfound water. How loud was this all when it was alive, Maybell said. I wanted to tell her I was from a completely different city called Boston, and cities up there were older, colder, and far more compact. Except she'd scowl and say the steel people worried about things that didn't matter. I said, very loud. There were cars roaring all day and night. The only break was when the smog came in and muffled everything, and the sky turned black. I know what smog looks like, she said. Tell me about something prettier. At night, all the shop signs glowed neon red and blue and pink in the sky. You could see all those logos dancing in the sky, I said. I looked back at her and saw a little smile. It was so beautiful. Around noon, we came upon a herd of seals resting on the beach. The plastic was piled high around the edges of their territory. As we stalked them, I wondered who'd gone through the trouble of doing all that work to protect the seals, till I saw a large bull grab a car fender and haul it into the pile. We picked out a young female with no calf in sight. Then we jumped her. The pack hauled themselves hooting into the water, but I sprinted faster. I killed her. We dragged her corpse far from the seal beach as we could and spent the afternoon prepping her. That night we had nice, blubbery seal meat. Maybell left as much fat as she could on. Fat's good for energy, she said. I didn't question her. I was just glad to have a full meal in my belly and weighing me down for the first time in weeks. As we cooked, the air grew hotter and wetter until it was a seething soup. The act of lifting brown seal meat to my lips generated perspiration on my arms. I looked over my shoulder. The Dallas skyline was dark finements against the deepest black well of storm clouds. They drove specks of flocking birds and fronds of plastic refuse before them on a flowing cloud like a bride's dress fluttering around her feet. I looked at Maybell and reached out an arm. She surprised me by throwing both her arms around me and burying her head on my shoulder. Her bushy blonde hair tickled my chin and made my nose itch as I kissed her greasy scalp. We found a solid stone wall and hunkered down. We stretched our lone blanket like a tarp and weighted down with the heaviest rocks we could find. I dug a hole just outside and shoved our rain catcher in, then checked the filter. All good. I crawled inside our little nap hole. She unfurled her arms and entangled me. There was only darkness, sweat, and our slickly wet bodies sticking together. We heard it first. The ground shook and groaned around us. A few insects fled across my back and up out the exit. Fools, I thought. The wind whipped them away. It blew the tarp in until it was concave and taut. Rain pounded the outside. Abandoned buildings groaned, but over it all came a deep, agonized roar. It rose to a painful howl and fell to a dying animal's moan as the tarp went slack. Then it rose to a howl again and screamed louder and louder. Water trickled under the tip and ran in two streams, one over my shoulder blades and onto my back, one over my breast and down to my belly. I shivered and hugged Maybell close. Sure, any moment would end our lives in a wall of water and terror. I hoped it would be too quick to feel. And I felt her tremble and hug me tighter. That feeling of someone clutching me tight as I was holding her, relying on me to protect them, it stoked a warmth within me. Whatever happens, I'm grateful to spend the end days with you, I whispered in her ear. I'm sure she couldn't hear me. My words crushed into the back of our little safe hole. Yet she must have felt my lips moving and understood. She dug her fingernails into my back and gnawed into my chest. The tarp ripped open and water vapor sprayed us. I hugged her tighter and twisted to take the cold shower. She shook her head. We suffered together. It went on for hours. Hurricanes had an eye, even the modern titanic storms. We must have missed it because it never stopped. At some point, I felt Maybell let out a long snore into my shoulder. I was horribly, destructively envious. Until a high-pitched scream raced overhead. She shot awake and dug fingernail furrows into my chest. It's me, I gasped in pain. She stopped and then hugged me and stroked my bleeding shoulders as the screaming continued. I'm sorry, she said. Then she cocked her head up. What is it? It howled right overhead until punctuated by a brief blast that shook the ground. I knew the sound of a scramjet. They always blew high over the city, screaming so loud we had to halt school until they stopped. There goes someone important, Father always said with a genuine delight. A jet, one of the steel people's flying machines, I said. Why is it out here in a storm? She screamed back so I could hear. I shrugged hard as I could. My shoulders ached and I flinched. Sorry, she said, and kissed me with salty lips. As she did that, the winds died off into a gentle hum. We held together, locked eternally, as trailing blasts of wind blew. We fell asleep soon, as the gaps were long enough. I awoke cold and wet, with a finger poking my chin. Damon, Maybell said. I opened my eyes, and a white light blinded me. Ah, I said, as I clamped my hands over my eyes. It's just the sun, silly. We survived, and we've got a full water catcher. She poked me down to my chest and pressed her palm over my sluggish heart. I crawled out and splattered into a puddle of mud. I came up in a crouch and breathed in cold, fresh air. The sky was pale gray, and a faint film of rain covered us all. The hurricane had blown away all the smog and left fresh, virgin coolness on the morning breeze. It kissed my skin all over and gave me the strength to stand. I could clearly see the jagged ruins of slow-sinking high-rises all around. The gulf itself had risen by several feet, so all the dunes we trekked across 2 days ago were little islands as trash gathered around them like reeds in my fingers. It was such a sweet morning. I fished a brush from my leatherback, the tiny bit of soap we'd borrowed once so long ago, and started scrubbing. Maybell emerged and did the same. She stretched out each tress of her hair and brushed the grime from it. "Where's the rain catcher?" I said. "I changed the filter, put it up there," she pointed, "the top of the stone wall. It sat there, pristine and beating sweat like one of us. 6 liters of clear drinking water, free of dirt and pollution." I got thirsty looking at it. "I was going to fill up all our bottles, but remembered how scared you were when I left you sleeping alone," she said. I took her cheek and kissed it. "Thank you, my doomsday companion." "Stop calling it doomsday," she said. She plucked her water bottles from her pack. "It is. I saw the floodgates of Boston collapse. Even if there's still my fellow steel people out there, I know it's all over," I said. "For you, maybe," she said. "For me, it's another day." I shivered at how easily the fall of human civilization could be brushed off. I washed her filler bottles, then handed mine over. Yet, I was jealous of her for not knowing more. Then she took my shoulder and gave me an apology with a wide-eyed stare I felt myself falling into. "Any nightmares?" she said. "No, the storm must have blown them away," I said. "Me old mom said the storm winds blow away all our evil spirits. That's why the waters send them whenever it gets too humid," she said with a toothy grin. "Now, if you've got nothing else to do, we need to find that jet. Maybe it's full of goodies for us." "Yeah, let's do that," I said. I shivered. I didn't want to see the luxuries of civilization. Even now, they reached out to me for a society I could return to, one pumping full of fresh water and ready farm food. Mabel saw I was afraid, so she insisted we wear armor. Without a scrap of body armor, we found a patch of pure mud smelling like clean earth and smeared ourselves head to toe in gooey blackness. I felt silly at first as we covered each other, and I took care of painting around her eyes and nose. Yet I worked away at her back, and she got mine. So she so thoroughly covered me that I began to believe and covered her just as thoroughly. When it was done, we were pitch black and Sheila from whatever my fears were. We hefted our spears, and I extended an arm. Maybell locked us back together, finger to finger. Finding the crash site was easy, as scaling the highest hill and looking around till we saw fresh, shiny metal amongst the weathered ruins. It sat right on the shoreline, nose pointed towards the surf. It was a millisecond of flight time away from being lost forever. Best of all, nothing was moving. We communicated by hand squeezes. I counted to three, and we leapt down together, landing with a combined grunt. She gave a single squeeze to tell me she was okay, and I led us away. The debris narrowed the street until I brushed my shoulders on either side, so I went first. I kept my spear pointed ahead and tucked under my left arm, while my right arm was held behind me to maintain my link with her. We emerged onto the beach. The acidic stench of burnt plastic and electronics reached my nostrils. I wrinkled my nose and pressed forward. "Ugh, the smell of evil," Mabel said. "Close enough," I thought. We circled the wreck, dipping our heels in the warm water. The ship was a luxury skimmer. It had a sharp nose like a fox's and sleek body. 2 short, rigid wings extended out its sides to engine pods, except one wing had folded beneath the wreck. The other stuck into the air, its engine leaking dark oil into the ground. The cockpit was polarized, so we couldn't see within. I grabbed my other best tool from my pack, a crowbar. The heat-resistant paint had peeled around my hands and the tip. The cockpit had been jarred loose, and there were plenty of gaps. I jammed the crowbar in and grabbed the end. Maybell came in and planted her hands in her mine. We threw our bodies into it. The cockpit groaned, then released its cargo with a final crack and a jolt that threw us down into the sand. Maybell leapt up first. By the time I was up, she had her spear aimed at the cockpit. The pilot wore a neon orange flight suit. She was slumped in her seat, brown blood dried around her eyes and nose. Already I could see her face purpling and smell the rot in her. I studied her suit and the writing. Where was she from? Where was there still civilization that hadn't been consumed by Earth's fury? Medicine bag should be behind her seat, Mabel said, and climbed inside. The cockpit was barely big enough for two people, but she went in head first and contorted herself around the seats. Couldn't help but grin at her long limbs sticking around to shove herself into the confines. Here we go. Her triumphant grin blazed bright as she yanked the red bag free. There should be emergency rations, too, I said. I planted a foot on the empty cockpit's chair and leaned over the dashboard. I tried the navigation computer. It was splotchy with busted diodes, but I clearly saw the outlines of the Mississippi River and the northern states. I felt frizzy hair tickle my shoulder. I shivered. Do you miss home? She said. Maybe, I said. It's okay, she said. Then she clambered up past me. I couldn't find any food. I felt around under the dashboard until the glove compartment popped free. Two black bunders came out, and I snatched them up. There, emergency dried food. It's not quite seal meat, but, I said. If we're hungry enough, it'll be good, she said. She perched on the edge of the dashboard, her sandals bending beneath her feet as she expertly held her balance. Is that all we can get? Yes, I said. We should bury her. Her soul is just sitting there alone, Mabel said. I looked from the dead pilot to the gray sky. I wondered if someone had set out to find the lost ship. The pilot had a few worry lines around her cheeks. Her brow was obscured by the visor and virtual reality view set of her helmet. Her mouth was slack, as though she'd gone down impassively trying to right her craft and clear the hurricane to the very end. Let's do something quick, I said. We buried her in a car debris and shoved a smashed landing strut straight down at the headspace. Mabel locked us together again. We bowed her head. She muttered something on her breath. I waited until we were on our way, fresh supplies and barter bait bouncing along our backs before breaking the solemn silence. Maybell, what did you say to her? I said. I just asked her not to be stupid anymore and fly into storms, Mabel said in a soft, completely serious tone. I nodded back. Simple and understandable. We headed along the shore until it rose along the bones of a concrete building into a steep cliff. We clambered to the top and were stunned by the brightness of the yellow rays. Wow, I said. I stopped us short and wheeled around to look at the noon light. Dallas towers were child's fingers reaching up to shield their eyes from the light. The city around them, a mess of smashed melons and running water. I was suddenly incredibly tired, so I sat down. Mabel sat down with me and clutched my hand into her lap. I found myself cold and shivering as I huddled up next to her. It was beautiful. The curve of her body hunched over, chin craned to survey the doomed plains, was beautiful. We'll stay on this side of Dallas and go straight up. We can track the river until it leaves the city behind, right? Mabel said. Yeah, definitely. The water will get pure after we pass it, I said. There should be at least one tribe out there. Maybe there'll be a river talker, Mabel said and looked at me sharply. I looked back at her butterscotch brown eyes. She didn't know what butterscotch was. I closed my eyes. I knew why the pilot had flown into a hurricane. Someone had ordered her to. I knew what they'd do if she refused. Is a river talker for the dead pilot? I said. No, I want one to marry us so our souls can be bound together forever, she said. She leaned back and waited, worriedly, for me to come to her. Yes, I said, and came running. I don't ever want to return to whatever's left of the Steel Peoples. I want to be with you forever. I shivered harder as I severed all my last doubts. She kissed me with wet, salty lips. I caught her cheeks and kissed her back just as hard. Her fingers gripped the sensitive insides of my elbows until my arms twitched. Beads of perspiration ran down my skin under my poncho, sending rivulets of mud trickling down to pool at the creases of my elbows and at my waist. A building somewhere in the distance groaned and imploded with a roar. Mabel kissed me harder. What a perfect place to be, I thought. And now I bring you chapter 2. Steel People, Bones of Giants. Maybelle stopped walking so sharply she kicked up a cloud of sand. I kept walking until our eternally linked hands dragged me to a stop, so I kicked up my own cloud of sand. I retreated back to her side, then looked at her. She was staring across the sun-blasted plain and the faint blue thread of river bisecting it. There was nothing but yellow and dark blue and sky blue until they all merged into the glaring distance. "Look ahead. Can you see it? The gates of the river. We're almost there." She pointed straight ahead. Her arm shined as the sun reflected off the dried river mud. I shielded my eyes with my hand, and two great shadows emerged from the blaze. The horizon was actually bold, with a thin gap where the river wove through. "Oh, it's the Ohaji Dam," I said. I felt a relief at a landmark. "I heard the Steel People built it to hold back all the water and stop the land from dying," she said. "We did. It was a last resort after all this had already turned to desert," I said. "It only turned to desert after we drained all the groundwater dry and drunk the last clouds from the sky," I added quickly. "The Steel People reaped the earth to the bone and grew their own divine justice," she said. She pulled me into her embrace and pressed her lips to my ear. "You didn't do that. You are no longer one of them." I held her close and nodded into her hair. After leaving the Dallas Harbor, the clouds had vanished and only the hot sun and pale sky remained to hammer us. The trash and weed waste became hot, packed in sand that left us caked white up to our thighs and bit our skin as if we sat on it in the daytime. We tried shielding ourselves with our ponchos, but the dark waterproof nylon had only gathered up the heat and baked us faster. So we painted ourselves in pale river mud as armor, and now we were a single gray post woven together, with her hair billowing as a flag in the waist. Here we survived. She kissed my cheek. "When we find a river talker, I will stand as your voucher so you can become a river person. They'll cut a line through my arm as a mark that I vouch for you. Then we can be together forever." I shivered again. "I'm the luckiest person alive." "No, I am," she said and kissed my lips. The gates grew as the days went on. The gates grew as the day went on, until their expanse blocked the evening sun, and finally, after many days, shade kissed our skin and cooled it. I grinned at Maybelle. "The river gates are protecting us." That grin faded when I looked up and behind the gates in detail in the last light of the setting sun. The Osage Dam had been meant to create a reservoir in the middle of the dying southern Great Plains. It had already collapsed when I was born. I watched a documentary about it in school. Then our own seawalls had been breached by a hypercane, and I'd left the Steel People forever. It was a wall of bleached concrete and steel rising 425 feet high. A jagged gap ran through the middle third. The river thrust through it, the wreckage in the center, and sprayed out. I strode into the river until the current was up to my knees. It pushed against me so hard I had to dig my feet in the ground and trudge forwards. The sweat that had been evaporating off me for weeks now began dripping off my brow. "You're not swimming up that, silly," Maybell said. I shrugged and returned to shore. "We need another way up." "We'll find one. I can climb. Can you?" I looked up. "I grew up in a city. Of course I can climb well." "Where to, though?" "I can see a few ledges we can stop and rest at," she said. "Let's look in the morning." We did the same thing every night. We washed the mud off, made a fire from scavenged dead wood, set up our sill, and then laid out our net in the river and baited it with some fish from our previous catch. As far from Dallas, the river at least had catfish. They were foul and needed thorough cooking, but they were something. We ate dried catfish with our last can of vegetables scavenged from the Dallas ruin. Then we lay down for the night, belly still growling. Maybelle flopped down and her hair tickled my chest and neck. I hugged her close. She turned over to look at me and I walked her legs up until they were curled around me. "We're going to rest today and celebrate when we get over, okay?" "What if we fall?" I said. "Then," she sighed. I nodded back. Alone, we were a nub of bone being ground down. I shivered at the thought. She trembled too. I knew then, if one of us fell, the other would jump. I could see it in my mind for a brief, horrible instant. We could not survive alone. It would not prolong the inevitable. The last thing I saw was her eyes sliding shut as if she were dead. Her gentle breathing comforted me, coaxed me into slumber. Then, orange sunlight in my eyes. Hey, love, I shook her awake. We packed our camp, our trap, and netted two decent-sized catfish. I killed them while she refilled our water bottles from the still. We smeared each other with river mud, being careful to get every nook and cranny. Only then did we tie our gear over our shoulders and set off. We spent the morning studying the gates. It was a ladder that descended halfway down until it ended in open air where the dam had shattered. I pointed it out. There's a ledge below it. We can make it up there. We are free winds, she said. We followed the riverbank until we were directly below the ladder. It was at least 200 feet straight up to reach it. Ready, she said. Oh, yeah, I said. We took off our sandals and tied them around our necks. Maybelle bit her lip as she searched the jacket facade for an opening the right size and shape to grab onto. For all the broken concrete was like finding a needle in a haystack. And she leapt up, dug her fingers into a crack I hadn't seen, then walked her legs up. In seconds, she found a series of deep cracks worn by the wind and winter ice. From there, she scampered up with joyful ease. I leapt up and got the ledge she used. I was tall enough to just reach up and grab the bottommost crack and pull myself up. From there, I followed her step for step. She moved quickly. I hurried to follow and not lose sight of her path. The first ledge was an overhang, and she twisted a bit, feeling around with a hand for grip. I stopped below her and watched. She seemed perplexed from my view under her armpit until she compressed herself and leapt up, taking my heart with her as she got her fingertips onto the edge and hauled herself over. I had bigger fingers and toes, and I had to maneuver a bit before hauling myself up the edge with my longer reach. I sat beside her and looked down. That's 100 feet, I said. I know, she said, and beamed at me. Sweat dripped down her forehead. Did you see that jump? I did. That was scary, I said. Please be more careful. She was already moving on. There's writing here on the inside. Look, she said, and pulled me by the shoulder. The ledge was what was left of a platform within the dam structure. I crawled past her under the broken steel doorway and saw the reinforced bricks that filled this concrete structure. On the ceiling, a metal sign was installed. Is it operating instructions, she said. I read and shook my head. No, it's a prayer. Bless our works, Father. Save your children with this great project. She stared up at it incredulously. Is the steel people God, their dad? I snorted. No, maybe, I'm not sure. I just remember there was mandatory praying. I think we were just desperate, I said. That's why river talkers are so important. The river's right there, not invisible. She said, tell me, did the Father ever actually give you protection? I looked out over the river. There were no steel people ruins here. The dam bursting had washed everything and everyone away, sitting in a cascade of water rushing down until it slammed into Dallas. I'd seen old footage of it rolling through the streets, sweeping families away, smashing them up into cars like the ice cubes in a shaker, pulverizing the canned veggies into a nice smoothie. In Boston, I'd experienced the same thing, except I'd been in the water for that long and watched everyone I knew smashed by the wreckage while I somehow survived. I think he tried, but we were too far gone. Look at that desert. Who created that? What was here before the desert? Farmland. Millions of square miles of farms feeding the entire continent. According to the last river talker I prayed with, there was a great famine years ago. Do you remember that? I was born after the famine, but I learned about it in school, I said. I looked up and saw that the second ledge was far more an overhang than the first, meaning we'd be climbing almost upside down. The ladder dangled over the edge, offering safety. We got a rough climb ahead anyways. Look at that. She did, and leaned back and back. I giggled and reached out an arm so her head rested on it. No problem, she said, and let herself fall back into my grasp. I caught her, dipped her down, and kissed her. That's how steel people kiss pretty girls, I said. It's lovely, she said. Can you keep that? Of course I can, I said, and laughed. She stood, and I did with her. My heels hit the edge. "Do it again when we get to the top," she said. With that, she scaled the wall with a leap and began powering upwards, heedless of the gravel she sent cascading down and over the edge. I followed her up. She took the ledges easily, slowing as the cliff curved to completely vertical, then curved back so her hair was dangling in the open air. I followed steadily, my fingers dug. "Hey, slow down," I said. She stopped and craned her neck back to see me. She grinned and waited as I hauled myself up after her. I got almost level with her, then she started up. "I'll get the ladder. If it doesn't drop me, it should be fine for you," she said. "No, just get to the ladder. Just get to the ledge, please," I said, and followed. She instead scooted over to the ledge and reached out an arm. The ladder creaked as she seized it, then swung herself over. Her legs wrapped around the edge and pulled herself up, her shadow dangling past me. It feels stable," she said. "Look, it leads straight to the top. We can get there now." "Fine," I said, and clambered after her. Gravel fell past me. Then a metallic shriek rang out, and a dull gray bolt dropped past me. I saw her shadow and the ladder swing across the damp surface as a scream left her lips and winged out over the endless desert. Only I heard it, and I clambered as fast as I could. Then a sharp clank just as my fingers grabbed the edge. "Help!" I lunged for her just as the ladder fell free. My hand got something firm and organic, and I dug my fingernails in. Her entire weight slammed into me. My arm screamed in pain as loud as she did, then my other arm as my entire weight landed on it. Her hair fluttered out into the void as her arms and legs flailed in blind panic. She hung there, below me, out in the void. The two of us frozen there, with just my 10 fingers holding us together. "Grab the wall," I grasped. "Maybell, the wall." She scrabbled for it. Her fingers brushed the dirt. I groaned and threw all my weight into my left arm. My muscles locked up, then shifted as I swung her ever so slightly in. "I got it," she said. "I got both hands. Let me go." I released her, and my fingers came back bloody. Then I got the ledge. They slipped the first time, but I got purchased the second and hauled myself up over the ledge. It was just big enough to get my bottom down. Maybell climbed after and slammed herself down beside me. She threw her arms around me, and our gasping breath whistled in the air. "I'm sorry I'm so stupid of senses," she said. I stopped the answer. I was too empty as the adrenaline drained away. Too glad she was alive as tears stung my eyes. I buried my face in her hair and kissed her. We remained there, limbs shaking together as we clung to the edge. I didn't have the strength to move, and I doubted she would either. "My neck is bleeding," she said. "Show me, please," I said. She turned her back to me, and the mud on her shoulders had turned rust-colored. I hadn't even seen where I grabbed her. I'd been panicking so hard. I pulled a med kit from my bag and started rubbing nanite paste into it. I spat to activate the putty and let the nanites get to work. "You know, the steel people created healing miracles like this, but they couldn't build a dam," I said. "They couldn't maintain a dam, like how we have to eat and water trees every day. They couldn't keep it fed until it broke," she said. I paused to think on it and the crumbling buildings I grew up amongst. "Yeah, true," I said. I finished and wrapped the pack back into my bag. I realized something as I was falling. I wanted to scream your name, but you don't have a name right now. First, we need to choose you a river name with the river talker. Then we bind our souls. "Do I need to make it special?" I said. "No," she pivoted around, and her eyes lit up with laughter, even as she slumped against me. "My ma chose Maybell because it was pretty, like the last flower she saw the year before I was born," she said. "I'll think of one," I said. The sun was directly above us now and approaching the edge of the dam. "We need to climb. Have you stopped shaking?" "No, you?" "No," I said, and I held out my trembling hand. "I don't want to climb in the shadow," she said. "Me either." I pulled my knees up and stood carefully, leaning on the hot wall. The ladder now ended just above my head. It was bolted onto the wall from here and up at least. "I'll lead," she said. She leapt up the wall and found a long diagonal crack. She got her hands and feet inside and essentially shimmied up. I followed her, scraping skin from my toes to jam them inside. When we reached the ladder, she scampered right over it and kept going. When the crack ended, she found new handholds. I followed her to the end of the crack and reached for the handhold. It was too small for my fingers. I tried testing my weight and it slipped out. "Maybelle, I can't follow you," I said. She looked down, then looked around. "I can't see anything else here. Can you?" I twisted as far as I could. There were only the little pock marks she, with her slender fingers and small feet, could easily slip into. I retreated and grabbed the ladder. The rungs immediately groaned. I jammed my free hand in and yanked as hard as I could. The bolts rattled but held fast, with no slipping. I clambered on and winced at the hot metal. I followed, moving fast enough to keep my hands from burning. In this way, I scaled up to the top and finally pulled myself over. "Hey," I said. Mabel was standing on the other edge like a statue, jaw slack. I immediately went to her side and looked out over the edge. It was pale green. Slender, young trees rose around the river. Grass stretched beyond them all the way to the raised banks of the reservoir. I shielded my eyes and scanned to the horizon. There was no end to the green. "We found it," Maybelle said. I put a hand on her shoulder. She planted her hand on top. A metal hut stood at the end of the dam itself. Beyond that, the earthen banks of the old lake spread wide. They were brown and green with tufts of grass holding the dirt in. "I think if we walk around the dam, we can just go down the embankment instead of climbing down the other side," I said. I untied my sandals and pulled them on. She looked that way and nodded. "Let's go. I want to experience green again." We passed the hut and were surprised to find the walls painted over in fresh red and blue. Maybelle flitted along the walls, tugging me after she studied it. A river flowed in endless curves, woven like a braid. People and animals alike spawned from it in red figures of two legs and four. "We're here," she said. "What?" I said. "This is work by the river people," she said. Her shout echoed back at her. I looked down to the fertile reservoir bed, then back to the desert we just walked through. "It's a painting. They could be long gone." "Nah, this painting says they're living here." "I know it does," I said softly as I broke her heart. Maybe they're still here, but I doubt it." "Nah, we're not steel people. We don't die out. We're still alive," she said, and grabbed my shoulders. Her eyes were wild and cheeks flushed bright red. I took a step back as this side of her burst free and shook me by the shoulders. "I don't know," I said. "I don't think there's anyone left. I think we're the last two people in existence. It's just the earth taking revenge on us for how we ruined her with pumping poison into her and taking all our water out. No, she's taking revenge on the steel people, not us. We are the survivors who live in the clean river," Maybelle said. I shook my head. "We all had church in the old world. It was mandatory to go. I think our leaders thought we had no choice but to pray to God." "What's a church?" Maybelle said. "It's a big fancy building where steel people go to tell their God." "Well, that's not us," she said. "Okay, I gave up. It's not your river people." "Ours," she said, and her fingernails dug into my shoulder. "Ours," I said. "There are river people. Let's go." I let myself be dragged along after her. Her knuckles turned white as she held her spear in a ball fist. I wasn't sure if I should be apologetic or not. And I let the silence absorb our emotions and cool us off. Indeed, the only sound besides our footsteps was the distant flowing in the river. Maybe there should be birds. There weren't many birds left. We skittered down the slope from patch of grass to patch of grass. The ground we landed on at the bottom was dry but firm. It didn't crumble into dust and caught our feet when we walked over it. We made a beeline straight for the trees. Maybelle then hopped up on her toes and delicately picked her way around them. I saw her squeeze between two branches and shook my head, but I humored her. These trees were all young and thin, with branches reaching to me like a pleading child. I saw a few had been blown over and lay in heaps of roots and dirt. We ducked around them and continued on, till we slipped through and the river opened its blue arms to greet us. We splashed right up to our waists and let the currents caress us and promise us that no matter what vengeance the earth took, there'd always be forgiveness hidden, waiting for those who learn from their crimes. Maybelle dropped into a crouch, the water up to her neck. She began whispering. I dropped down beside her. The water was warm once it got over my shoulders. A little dart of a fish swam between us. "You're praying," I said. Yeah, she stopped and looked at me. Can I join? I said. She nodded and closed her eyes. River, we come to thank you, not take from you. We come to thank you, not take from you, I said. We thank you for providing us everything we need to survive, she said. We thank you for providing us everything we need to survive, I said. We thank you for giving us mercy amidst the vengeance wrought on our ancestors. We thank you for giving us mercy amidst the vengeance wrought on our ancestors, I said. I dunked my head under and let the current dribble by me. I saw an entire swarm of little darts of fish race past. Reeds reached up from the bottom. I popped up and sucked in a breath. We're not done yet, silly, she said. She was grinning wearily at me. Keep us safe, and if danger claims us, carry our souls far away to safety. Keep us safe, and if danger claims us, carry our souls far away to safety, I said. She grabbed my shoulders, and we dunked together. Her eyes shined as the water reflected the light. I stared into them and grinned wide. We wrapped our arms around each other and kissed. I held her tight by her shoulders and kissed her until my teeth dug into her lips. Her fingernails pricked at my back and as she held on close. Her eyes stared right into mine as we grinned against each other. As my lungs began to burn, I held her tighter. Her fingernails pricked on my back in answer, until red spots appeared in our vision. We stood straight up in an explosion of water and gasped for breath together. Let's stop for the day, she said. I nodded. I trudged back towards the shore, then sat back down and laid back. My head rested on the shoreline with the water lapping around my ears. I'm cooling off. She lay down beside me, and our hands dug into the riverbank together, letting mud slide over our fingers. Sleep never came as the lapping water was just enough nudging to keep me awake. However, I fell into an empty, relaxing bliss. No worries, no more walking, and the adrenaline of the great climb behind us. I closed my eyes and let the minutes roll by, with only my heartbeat to pass the time. Hey, Maybelle suddenly said, and squeezed my hand. Something's in the water. I opened my eyes to find a sky violet, then rimmed orange. She's already sitting up and pointing. I stood in a splash and followed her finger up the river. A dark shape drifted down the middle, awash in the evening gloom. I squinted. I think that's a boat, I said. I saw nothing moving atop it. I strode into the water up to my waist and then dove in after. The river wasn't too wide. I only needed a few quick strokes to glide out there. It was a fiberglass-hulled canoe, heavily scuffed but still shining. I grabbed the prow. She swam past me and took the stern. We hauled it back to shore. A blanket was stretched inside, and a bundle of what looked like bags at the back. This was all fresh and clean. Someone had just lost her boat downriver. We dragged it up on shore and studied the two bags inside. One was clearly a Steel People backpack scavenged from somewhere. The other was made from some kind of animal hide. Couldn't tell what, but it had been stitched into a proper messenger bag with bright red cords. This is something we made, Mabel said, and snatched it up. Don't open it. It belongs to someone. I nodded and grabbed up the backpack. What about this one? Maybe that one, too. Only if we're desperate, okay? She said. Then she pivoted and looked upriver. I couldn't clearly see the shoreline anymore. I could only tell the river by the void and the reflection of the moonlight, flanked by high shadows of trees on the banks. There's somewhere that way. I was wrong, I said. She didn't seem to care as she stared off into the distance. I also don't know how to paddle a boat. I'll show you, she said. It'll be much quicker than walking. We'll start tomorrow. I nodded at her. We dragged the boat a bit further up the banks and wedged it between two trees. Then we laid ourselves down. No fire, lest we burn the trees. We wrapped the ponchos around ourselves as blankets, then wrapped ourselves in each other's sleep, in arms. Sleep didn't come. I could only fear who was waiting, now that we knew there could be an end to our journey. And so that's the end of chapter two. As I said, I'm giving you both chapters simply because the first chapter I recorded originally back in November. So, you know, it's good to be able to put it all together. Appreciate you tuning in, and at this point, I'll let you go. Thank you for listening to the show today. I hope you enjoyed it, and you'll return again for more political discourse. Please like, subscribe, reply, and share the videos or audio podcasts, however you watch or listen. The goal here is to resist the authoritarians who want to take our freedoms away from us. I appreciate everyone around the world, no matter where or who you are. Together, using independent media, we can resist the authoritarian governments in the West and keep them from taking everything away from us.
As I say goodbye this week, I wish to leave you with this Irish blessing as you go about your day. May the sun warm you a bit,